For the afternoon show on BBC Radio York with Ellie Fiorentini. Now, Helga was born near the Lithuanian border. As a young girl, she met Hitler. She also helped her mother survive repeated SS searches on their home. As a refugee, she fled over frozen lakes in the winter of 1944-45. She was fleeing from the Russian armies, and this is where the worst was yet to come. Her story is told in Helga, and Helga Jahadi is with us this afternoon. Hello and welcome to the programme.
Hello.
The story is, I suppose, probably most people would find it unbelievable because it's so incredibly harrowing. Why did you decide after such a long time to write about your experiences?
I think it was my family who more or less wanted to know about it. I never talked about the time when I was a refugee. I would tell them about when I went to school and when Hitler came to power and so on. But from the moment when I became a refugee, it was such a bad time, and I was so frightened and hungry and cold that I didn't want to remember things. And my children said to me one day, "But we might want to know about it. Why don't you write?" And once I started to write, it absolutely flowed out, and it all came out. And after that, I must say, I was able to talk about it.
Was it a tearful experience to sit down and write it?
Yes, it was, because I went through most of it again. I felt hungry again, and I felt cold again, and remembering certain things. I didn't even write all of it, because some of it was horrible. I think what people never realized in England was what happened in the eastern part of Germany when the Russians eventually entered East Prussia, where we lived, because the Allies in the West, the Normandy landing and so on, I mean, that was all right. The Germans waited for them. A lot of Germans wanted the war to finish in any case. They didn't move out. They just waited, and when they came, the war was finished for them, and that was it. But in the East, we had heard about the atrocities of that the Russians committed. So this is what it was. When they came near to us, we just fled.
What did you tell your children for all those years whilst they were growing up?
Well, I was just only saying I was a refugee, and we got out somehow and went back to Switzerland and left it like that. I wouldn't say any more. Really, until they sort of said, "Look, we like to know some details." Occasionally, I might have said one or two things. I used to always say to them, "You mustn't leave any food." I would never permit them to leave any food on the table, because I know what hunger is like. And so I wouldn't say I forced them to eat it, but I said, "Right, we have smaller helpings then, but food must not be thrown away." So things like that I did mention, but not what it really was like when I was a refugee.
What was it like growing up in Hitler's Germany?
It wasn't too bad, actually, because living in the capital of East Prussia in Königsberg, it was a very big town, and although my school friends had to join the Hitler Youth at the age of 10, being Swiss, I didn't have to do it. And I don't think it was any different than any other schools, I wouldn't have said. So we had very good education. Maybe a little bit more stressed, the Nazi party and so on, but not really at school. That was more in the Hitler Youth. So I wasn't affected. But it was when Hitler came to power. That's the first time when I sort of realized that things started to become different, because we had two Jewish girls in class, and suddenly one day they didn't turn up, and I was rather friendly with one of them, so I thought I'd go and find out what had happened to her. And I took my bike and went down to the road where she lived, and her parents had a draper's shop, and I was quite shocked when I arrived there and saw that the shop had been smashed up, the windows were broken, and they lived above the shop, and all that was, the windows were wide open, there was nobody there. And when I asked, "Well, what has happened here?" because my first reaction was, "Were there burglars or so?" and they said, "No, now be quiet, you know, this was the SS. When I got home, my parents told me off and said I must not go near any of those places, because my father pointed out that we were guests in the country. He said, "Look, we are Swiss. We're guests in this country. We have to be quiet. I don't want to lose my business." He had a dairy business in Tilsit, which is on the Lithuanian border. And, of course, he didn't want to destroy this with any talk. I think my parents knew a little bit more about it than we did. We were children, and they tried to bring us up in the belief that we were only there for a certain time in Germany, and then we would go back to Switzerland.
Did you ever find out what happened to the two girls?
No, we never did. We never did. They just disappeared, and that was that.
Now, you yourself and your family had many searches by the SS, didn't you?
Yes, but that was not until the war had started, because before the war, that was all right. But when the war started, they certainly felt that foreigners ought to be watched. And although we were Swiss, a neutral country, the SS used to come and search our home. My father only used to come home for weekends, because his dairy business being in Tilted, he was away from home. My mother used to get quite frightened, because they weren't really very kind. They used to open all the cupboards and doors, and I think what upset my mother very much was when they used to push all the linen out of the cupboard with their black boots, sort of kicked them up in the air, and of course it meant that we had to do the washing again. They were looking for I think they thought we might have guns or ammunition, or maybe even secret papers. I don't know what they thought we had, because we really didn't have anything at home. The only thing we might have had was a little bit of extra food, because with my father having a dairy, my mother became quite good on the black market, exchanging butter for, for other things which you couldn't get, which were rationed or on closing coupons. And I think they were looking out for that, but we used to hide those extra things in the cellar. My sister and I became quite good at that.
Now, you decided to flee the country in the winter of 1944-45. Why did you get up and move away?
Well, the Russians were pretty close by then, and I was studying medicine, and the university was bombed out, and so was our anatomy, and we had to work in military hospitals. And the soldiers who arrived from the front told us that the Russians were much nearer than we were told. You see, we were only allowed to listen to German news. We were never allowed to listen to any other news. And the news we got was that the German army was able to hold the Russians back, but they didn't. And the soldiers told us also what the Russians were like, because some of the parts which the Russians had already occupied were never pushed out again. They could see how they behaved to the civilian population and the atrocities they committed. So everybody was absolutely petrified of the Russians. So when they were close enough for me to realize now it's time to go, I left. And unfortunately, at that particular moment, I was alone. My whole family was scattered. So I just joined a refugee trek and tried to get out the best I could. It was a very severe winter. We had 10, 15 degrees below zero. And of course, you start off by having some food at first, because I took it with me. I had a sleigh and a satchel, you know, and a rucksack. But the Russians gradually encircled us, and the only way we could get out was to get over, it's not really a lake, we call it Huff, which divides East Prussia from the Baltic, but there is a small piece of land called the Nerung, and we knew if we could get over the ice towards the Nerung, we would be all right walking along there and getting away from the Russians, because they had encircled us. And I think that was the worst part, to get over this frozen, let's call it a lake, because most people don't know it's called the Huff, because you've got to get the map out for that. And the Russians did know that we were refugees, but I'm afraid they did shoot at us. And if the ice breaks and horses and carts fall in, it's no good trying to save people, not when it's below 15 degrees zero, because they'd be dead. So I saw a lot of dead bodies by the side of the road. But we made it to the Nerung, and when we got there, nothing really grows on there except trees. I think the hunger is not the worst, because after time you don't feel hungry anymore, but you get weaker. But the cold, I never got over the cold of it. And even today when I talk about it, I still feel cold. I feel as if my clothes sort of move away from my body, and I just feel cold. It was terrible, you know. We had some women, they used to put sacks over their heads just with slits for their eyes so they could see. And the children used to cry, and they stopped crying because they were too weak to cry anymore. There were thousands of people getting out of the East. I eventually made it. I did get out. I nearly died. I finished up in hospital, and I nearly died. They had to burned my clothes because they were only rags, and they cut my hair because it was all matted. But at least I was alive. I found my mother at the same place in Greifswald because we had friends there, and that's why I made my way there. But even then I felt the Russians would find us or would come as far as that, and I didn't want to stay there. So my mother and I, we started off again, and we got a lift on a lorry. I'm afraid this time it was an English Spitfire who shot at us, but we were able to jump off, and the lorry burned. And we finished up at a local farm. And because during the war I had learned to milk cows in one of the war services which I had to do, we stayed on the farm, and I worked on the farm until the end of the war. And then gradually I tried to find the rest of my family. I found my father in Hamburg. That was an absolute miracle. He just sat in the road and I found him. He still had his car, and he didn't want to drive it because then it would be confiscated, so he did something on the engine, so it was broken. And he had some money. He bought an old horse. And it was so old that you could even see the ribs on his body. And the horse pulled the cart, and off we went from Hamburg. We were trying to get to a refugee camp, but I'm afraid that poor horse didn't get very far. We finished up in a small village where the burgomaster, or the mayor, offered us accommodation at an empty radio station, because the war was finished, you see, and this old German radio station was all smashed up, but at least the huts were still there. So we moved in there. It was very primitive. Our toilet was a little hut in the back with a bucket, and we had a well. Well, the poor horse, I'm afraid, well, my poor horse had to go in the end because my mother tried to grow some vegetables, and I'm afraid the horse just went all over it, so she got very cross about it. So my father took the horse down to the village and exchanged it for a bicycle. He brought the bicycle back. And my mother now had this grand idea that I ought to travel from Hamburg all the way down to the south of Germany, where my sister lived. She was married there. And because it was in the so-called American zone, she felt that she wouldn't have moved out, she wouldn't have been afraid, she would have stayed there. So I'm afraid I set off on this bicycle, which was really very bad, had more patches than than the tire was worth. You know, the tire wasn't very good. And I had one puncture after another. I slept in haystacks and I slept on farms. I even got imprisoned by the Americans for a few nights. I fell in love, actually, with the American sergeant, but, well, nothing came of it. I found my other sister in Meinburg, and actually I've got two sisters, and both of them were there, and I brought them back to the radio station in Hamburg. My brother found us there too, so the close family of us were there on that radio station, and we stayed another winter there. My elder sister even had her baby there in those very primitive surroundings. I mean, there was nothing there. We only had a palliasse and one little stove where we cooked on, and we, like I said, we had to get the water from the well. And the following year, the Swiss Embassy organized for us to get back to Switzerland. And that is the story I wrote in my book.
What kind of effect did the experiences that you had from the Russian army and the atrocities that they carried out, how do you think that affected your own life, even today?
I think I still don't like the Russians. I don't think I ever will, because of that, although I'm quite sure there's some who are all right and they're good. Like I said before, I never allowed my children to waste food. I've always been very frugal, I think. And when I got married, one of the things my future husband had to promise me that I would never be cold. And he stuck to it. You know, I've always been warm. I've always had heating in the house. I think that was the one thing I do insist on. I just can't be cold. I never want to be cold again.
Presumably because of the memories that it...
Yes, that it yes, because back. Of that. You know, when I was a refugee, it was too cold.
So what does the future hold for you now? It's a remarkable story. Are we going to see it made into a film or on our television screens?
Well, if somebody wants to pick it up and make a film, why not? Everybody says it ought to be run. I've had fan mail and people write and say, you know, this really ought to make a film story. Well, we just have to wait and see. But I feel that the story... Now I feel it's good to having told the story, because I had one letter. I was very surprised about that. It's a woman who had a similar experience to me, and she wrote to me and she said, when I came to England first, I told people about it and then didn't believe me. Now, you having written this story, I'm so glad, because I say to my friends now, go and buy this book, and you can see that I didn't lie. I spoke the truth, because the trouble was the Russians were allies, and I think because of that, nobody really talked very much about it in England. But now everything is much more open and one can talk about it. Now it's gradually coming out. And I think it should be told, because it might help us all to keep the peace, not to have a war, because it's not only the soldiers that suffer, the civilians suffer just as much, and maybe even more, because they lose their homes, their families. And I mean, even now, when I think what happened to our family, the end of it was that we were all scattered, and we are still today. I mean, one of my sisters lives in Italy, one lives in Switzerland, and my brother lives in Germany, and I live in England. So we are four of us, and we're each living in another country. We never settled down together again because of this broken up, because we were broken up through the war.
Well, your story is remarkable. It will horrify many people. It'll touch many people's hearts. It will have different effects on different people. The book is called Helga. It's the life story of Helga Djihadi. It's available in most local bookshops now. Helga, thank you very much for sharing your story with us this afternoon.
Thank you.